So, good evening. Like many of us, I usually start by saying what a great pleasure it is to be here. And of course it is. But this evening, that phrase has particular resonance for me, because it's the first time for me, maybe not for you, I imagine you've had several meetings before now, but it's the first time in a couple of years I've stood in a room with unfamiliar people to give a talk to physically present, as well as those online attendees. And it's that simple but really profound pleasure that will animate my remarks about AI tonight. It's also why I've chosen not to use slides, because I think if I want you to take away one thing from my remarks, it's that I think delivering strategic advantage through the national AI strategy will depend on us thinking more about people than about the technology. So at the start of the pandemic, we were told that AI would change the world, and I am confident it still will. But the pandemic has also brought with it some pretty profound realizations, I think, about the nature of our society and its relationship to technology that we're all still working through. I work at UCL, one of the world's great universities, there are others, and approaching its bicentenary. Before the pandemic, we were told that universities were places that were failing to adapt to modernity, that were hopelessly out of date, that would inevitably be pushed aside by the disruptive forces of technological innovation. Online learning platforms were the future, particularly if you wanted to learn about machine learning. Now, 2 years into the pandemic, a rather different story has emerged, I think, both politically and socially. Despite the outstanding efforts of our staff and indeed staff across the UK in adapting to deliver over 2 years of teaching and learning online, students have given their verdict. They would like to return to face-to-face education and shared campus experiences, as would their parents, as would their lecturers, as would the university's minister. Advanced technology and innovative blended approaches will therefore remain part of their education. But the interesting thing is that students demand human interaction in our great seats of learning. And we're, of course, all here physically today, even though we could just be on Zoom. So I want to begin my remarks by reflecting on that revised version of the future. It was pretty obvious to all of us, I'm sure, before the pandemic, that artificial intelligence and associated technologies are a really important part of our shared future. It's also made visible the crucial importance of applied mathematics and computer science in addressing some of the consequences of our enforced isolation. But it's also made visible the limitations of our technology, and I don't just mean slides running amok. While the collaborative tools that enabled many of us to continue to be productive from home are amazing, it's equally important that all of us miss the social interaction and shared physical experiences, not just of our families, but at our workplaces. So that's a reminder, a very visible reminder to me, that technology comes into existence on a planet already populated by human societies, and indeed, I'm a life scientist, plants and animals. So that's the first observation I want to make, that as the OECD say, AI should be for people and planet. UCL makes this the centerpiece of our AI strategy, trying to position AI as a force for good in the world through considering the human dimension, inclusion and diversity, all things I'm delighted that all previous speakers have highlighted. We're also interested in open science and the potential for misuse. And by having that kind of framework at the front of our minds, we want to position AI as a force for good. Now, my second observation is on the consequences of that blended future I've outlined for the sort of workforce we'll need. And I would commend to you, as well as the excellent reports we've heard about, the 2018 Royal Society and British Academy project on the future of work. So the browser and the computer screen are a deeply controlled, two-dimensional at present world in which to deliver machine learning and its benefits directly to individuals. And in such an environment, the answer to any question might well be, we need some more software engineers. Jolly good software engineers are too. But the sector-specific environments in which humans live and work are much messier and more uncontrolled. Mastering successful interactions in different sectors like that often requires tacit knowledge that's domain-specific and an approach that is fundamentally humanistic. Think of going to your doctor or going to a hospital, for example. If the answer to that question is more software engineers, then we've not really properly understood the question. So to ensure that the benefits of AI are seen in every sector, as the AI strategy demands, will therefore depend on many disciplines. Echoing Tim's word on the skills agenda, I would say we need to recognize the central role of the arts and humanities in understanding and interpreting human experience. The social sciences in helping shape how AI might fruitfully interact with people and societies. What if Facebook had been designed by social scientists, for example? Such disciplines, in my view, are as important as computer science in shaping new AI technologies. Now, for particular applications of AI, we also need to combine domain-specific expertise and knowledge with technical expertise. For example, in a domain I know about, medical applications will clearly benefit from structured interaction between doctors, healthcare professionals, computer scientists, and software engineers. How we create those partnerships, though, is, I don't think, trivial and may merit some closer attention. So, for example, domain-specific expertise possessed by healthcare professionals is often tacit and not articulated explicitly, but it can be crucial. For example, one project I've been involved in, the selection by Google DeepMind of acute kidney injury as the medical condition to identify through longitudinal time series analysis of healthcare data, might seem a bit arbitrary. But it picks out what medical professionals know is one of the most common causes of unexpected deterioration in a patient's condition in a general hospital anywhere in the world. So it provides the algorithm with general applicability. And it came about not by chance, but because medical professionals work together with DeepMind in a systematic and structured way. So how do we bring together those kind of skills across different sector? I think there's two fundamental approaches. Either we train a single individual in both areas, or we bring together individuals with complementary skills. I would say both are domains in which universities and seats of further education excel. For example, in healthcare, we're used to training clinician scientists who straddle two worlds, two ways of thinking and doing, two sets of languages. But training clinician computer scientists, for example, is still in its infancy, and individuals with these skills are still pretty rare. Bringing together people with complementary skills is another approach, but it's not as simple as just putting people in the same room and hoping they get on with it. Universities, as well as other bodies, have increasingly deep experience at understanding how to create the conditions for that interdisciplinary dialogue between disciplines. There are many other examples at different levels of training. We need to do that for AI in applied domains for effective innovation to flourish. The alternative, of course, is to risk creating humans that work for AI rather than the other way around. And one area where I would highlight some warning signs in that regard is actually healthcare. If you look at the US, where rapid deployment of electronic healthcare record systems in the United States over the last decade has taken place, it hasn't, unfortunately, created a technological nirvana of elegant, unobtrusive, and effective capture of data from healthcare consultations. And actually, a much more challenging situation has emerged, and you might want to take a look at Atul Gawande's 2018 piece for The New Yorker, entitled Why Doctors Hate Their Computers. Essentially, instead of making healthcare easier and effective, doctors, in his view, feel trapped behind their screens, where physicians spend now about 2 hours doing computer work, data entry, for every hour spent face-to-face with a patient. The physician is required to conform to the requirements of computer data entry screens rather than focus on being a doctor. I suggest that should not be the future of AI. My third observation is about fairness and bias, which is not only topics of enduring interest in human societies, but I'm delighted to say that both speakers have already mentioned them. I find it a little surprising that the discipline of artificial intelligence has only recognized recently that this is a really significant problem. Machine learning systems trained on historical, and maybe it's not true. For the purposes of debate, I shall entertain this idea. Machine learning systems trained on historical or incomplete data have duly learned to produce unfair results. Examples I'm sure many of you are familiar with include corporate HR tools prejudiced against women, gender and dialect bias in automated captioning on a well-known website, and image tagging software that miscategorizes people as animals. These are shocking examples, but they hide even deeper challenges as AI progresses to consider complex domains like healthcare. Fairness in healthcare, I think, is uniquely complex because both model performance and healthcare outcomes depend in part on an unknown combination of biological, environmental, and economic factors. And some level of different model performance, being a bit technical here, that varies across a group may be absolutely desirable. So, for example, if a particular ethnic group is more at risk from a particular disease, and I'm sure you can think of diseases like that that have just caused a global pandemic. Unlike the earlier examples, a major problem affecting that sort of machine learning is the absence in many, perhaps most cases, of any reliable ground truth. Unlike other areas of machine learning where data can be labeled by a human with a high degree of accuracy, medical diagnosis, as many of you know, is fraught with uncertainty. Indeed, some conditions, really important conditions essentially exist as social constructs based on constellations of symptoms whose underlying causes are not fully known or agreed and change over time. So notwithstanding the excellent reports and guidelines that Wendy highlighted about ethical AI, these challenges are not merely superficial, I think, to be overcome by a particular ethical code. They're actually conceptual and fundamental. So I'm going to suggest as we progress with the development of AI, it's not just about ethical frameworks and conceptions of how we might address bias. We might actually wish to specifically invest in research and development to develop agreed frameworks that explore, quantify, and correct model performance across particular populations. And I think how that correction is applied is also a fundamentally humanistic question about what we want them to do about what is fair rather than a computable function. So my final observation, moving on from that, concerns how we might make all of this happen to benefit every sector and every region of the UK. And clearly we have a wonderful roadmap that sets that out. It should be clear from what we've heard this evening and indeed my own remarks that no single organisation can undertake this alone. Rather, we need a complex blend of infrastructure, expertise and entrepreneurship, an AI ecosystem. And I've heard that word used this evening already. Now, they don't happen by accident, I don't think, but they happen in particular locations in response to particular sets of incentives. It's the mixture of the right conditions, the right institutions, and the right connections that enable that transformation. I would observe one place where this happens again and again is in our cities. If you go back 200 years, we see the founding of my own university in London in 1826. Lots of other European institutions were founded at the same time. It catalyzed a huge flowering of talent and activity in the natural and life sciences, which led to the interplay of technology and biology that continues to drive innovation to this day. Now, I'd observe every region of the UK contains at least one world-leading comprehensive university, typically representing an anchor partner in its city for jobs and innovation, and deeply embedded in its local environment and culture. Addressing the issues of cross-disciplinary training, engagement of a broad range of sectors and disciplines is exactly what universities have specialized in over many centuries. And to apply that creative and catalytic power to work with commercial partners and other organizations across the UK is therefore a crucial way of delivering new AI technologies in industry and the public sector. So as AI moves from the browser to deployment among the people and planet we live on, establishing those partnerships could help ensure the relationship between people, society and AI algorithms is both balanced and proportionate. So wrapping up, I've only had time to provide four reflections, provocations, depending on your position, but I hope they're useful. The UK clearly has world-leading strengths, as Wendy outlined, across all the major components of a world-leading AI ecosystem. It's thus how we organize those strengths and incentivize them effectively to compete on a global stage that should concern us. And I hope I've suggested some ways in which that could be done. Thank you.